often do you know people who take the time to actively pay attention to what they're feeling, identify the source of their feelings, and take the time to think about how that affects other people?
From Washington, D.C., this is The Tightrope. I'm your host, Dan Smolin. Our mission on this podcast is to help you realize your dreams of doing meaningful work. Here you'll meet and be inspired by amazing people who overcame great odds. You'll discover what sparked them, how they explored work opportunities, the strategies that they employed to ensure career success, and the actions they boldly took to make it all happen. You'll also meet esteemed and nationally recognized thought leaders who are helping people like you to develop work skill, experience and leadership, and seize opportunity from a changing world so that your beautiful work dreams turn into reality. Together, let's turn work meaningful, for meaningful work is the future of work. Most everyone knows what IQ means. It's the intelligence quotient, a score derived from several standardized tests to measure a person's intelligence. But few people in the world know what EQ means. That's the quotient of emotional intelligence, which measures our ability to be aware of, control, and express emotion, and to handle interpersonal relationships with empathy. Today, we continue our conversation with Edith Richards. She is the founder and executive coach at A Top Career and a subject matter expert on emotional intelligence. In this second part of a two-part episode, we dig into the practical applications of EQ, especially how we can use it to make our work and workplace experiences positive and meaningful. We spoke with Edith Richards in August 2019 in Arlington, Virginia. Hey, let's talk about generations. A lot of people kind of typecast millennials and they turn them into cartoon characters. And I don't see that. My nieces and nephews are millennials, and they're really great kids. They're adults. They're the majority of the workforce right now.
Mm-hmm.
In your experience, do millennials relate well to EQ involvements, and do they handle it better or differently than, let's say, Gen Xers or late baby boomers like me?
I think it depends on the person.
Mm-hmm.
I've conducted many EQ assessments to all ages of people, and the only thing I can predict is that every assessment is unpredictable. Remember, it's a snapshot in time in that particular moment. So if you take the assessment again, you know, in 6 months, it might show something very different.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of studies on emotional intelligence, the studies have found that EQ tends to increase with age,
mm-hmm.
but it stagnates or even declines around the age of retirement. So if we're looking purely at numbers, boomers tend to score highest on EQ, followed by Gen X and then millennials.
Oh.
But, you know, that's not really surprising because the more we age, the more we realize why these skills are important. And we take active steps to work on them.
Mm-hmm. I just had a situation where I was visiting my mom, who mm-hmm. lives in a retirement community. And she said to me, nobody here has a filter. So that kind of validates where you were going, where as you approach retirement, the EQ sort of
declines there as you get older. Yeah. And, you know, there's several different schools of thought on this, but one is that if we're not working, we don't have to work anymore. We're not interacting on that professional level anymore. We start to not use these skills as much, and so we're showing up as deficient in some areas where we might have been more skilled in these areas when we were using them more regularly.
So to your point, because people aren't really traditionally retiring anymore, they're going on to second acts and third act. I'm on to my third act.
Yeah.
you've done more than one act.
Yeah, yeah.
And because of that, we have to maintain our EQ health.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, there's so many different definitions of being smart. And it's bringing up a woman I know who she constantly brags about her high IQ and her intelligence. And that's great. Okay. You know, it's your choice whether you choose to show that to the world or not. But for whatever, I mean, it's good to have a high IQ to be better at average than these kind of things.
Right.
But you know what? Just because she has a high score on an IQ test, allegedly, does that make her smart?
No.
I mean, not necessarily. I mean, this woman is also someone who, you know, she repeatedly overlooks details that are important to the project, and she shouts at people. She's, you know, she's coming across as aggressive instead of assertive, and kind of sucks the life out of the room when she walks in, you know? And so I have to ask, is that smart?
Well, listen, Beethoven, Einstein, IQ off the charts. They were probably miserable to live with.
It's a good point.
So, you know, my dad, he passed away, but he used to have this expression, there's book smarts and there's street smarts.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think the concept of EQ was even close to being formulated by the Israeli scientists that you mentioned.
Yeah.
But when you're growing up in a city and you're dealing with people out on the street, there are different capacities that have to play out in how you interact with people to not only get along but to thrive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's and that thriving, I believe it starts with awareness, you know? So, you know, for example, how often do you know people who take the time to actively pay attention to what they're feeling, identify the source of their feelings, and take the time to think about how that affects other people, you know? And if people could take the time to do that, how that might show up differently with what you're talking about in the home where people have no filter,
right.
You know?
So let's get to the benefits of emotional intelligence as they relate to meaningful work. And this is our focus here at the Tightrope. Work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people and communities, and is fun to do. Meaningful work. So often what we do requires buy-in, sometimes from different constituencies, but also from skeptics. Boy, do I deal with a lot of skeptics in my line of work.
I'm sure.
Will we who do meaningful work gain better outcomes to our hard work, more buy-in from skeptics with good emotional intelligence practices than if we didn't have them? And if so, why?
Okay, so I want to use a story to answer this question. I started a new job about 2.5 years ago, and I was thrown into a training situation as a trainer on a subject I knew nothing about. And I had no frame of reference for this subject. And there was a woman who was with me who was a subject matter expert, and she was meant to be a co-presenter at this event. And I think in her mind, I was the trainer, and she was just there to observe. So at one point, she ended up getting really angry with me because, you know, I wasn't comfortable with the content, and she yelled at me, and she's like, aren't you supposed to be a trainer? And she was blaming me, and you know, she was kind of making me feel pretty awful. Yeah, I know, it was a pretty horrible situation. And I instead, you know, I put on my emotional intelligence hat here, and I tried to come to a resolution. I'm like, you know, let's try to figure this thing out together. And, you know, I kept getting met with resistance and blame. And I finally realized there was very little that I can do other than just to get through this session as quickly as I could. But, you know, this woman actually made me cry. And fortunately, I didn't cry in front of her, but I went elsewhere, and I got very upset in the bathroom, and You know, and I still see this woman every day at work. And initially after that incident, it was really hard for me to see her and not remember how awful she made me feel in that moment. And I wanted nothing to do with her, and I avoided her. And then, I don't know what happened one day, I just realized, you know, this is an opportunity. And it's not an opportunity to get her to be a nicer person, but it's an opportunity for me to practice what I preach. This woman, she's not ready or willing to make changes. She doesn't see the need to make changes. She doesn't have that awareness to understand the effects of her behavior on other people like me. She's one of these skeptics that you mentioned, I'm sure, might not see the benefit of developing emotional intelligence. But you know what? That doesn't mean I have to match her.
What you just said made me think that there's causation between emotional intelligence and meaningful work.
Yes.
The meaning for you, not for her. Your emotional intelligence created the environment, the conditions to keep your work meaningful. Because it gave you,
yes.
I don't know if control's the right word.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you know, there's many of us, we're put into these environments or just different situations in life where we, you know, it's like there's this resistance, it's like there's this negativity pushing up against us. But you know what? We always have the power to choose. And that is the wonderful thing I think about emotional intelligence. We have the power to use it or not to use it in that moment. It is all up to us. It's a choice. And for this situation, I have chosen not to let this woman bother me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I practiced my stress tolerance, I guess.
Mm.
You know, and I looked at the reality of the situation. You know, used the reality testing element. And I see that, like, it's not just me. She's kind of mean to everybody. And that realization really helped me to work on to boost my own self-regard, and I worked on, you know, the content and tried to learn this content. And now when I see her, I directly say hello to her and I use her name and I try to have some small talk with her. Has this directly led to quantifiable results? Well, not really, but it's helped me tremendously.
Right.
It's helped me to navigate difficult workplace relationships. It's helped me to become more self-confident and aware of my strengths. And because of these things, I'm performing better. And that's led to better results. And you know, now this woman, she actually responds to my hi. And every once in a while, she'll ask me, how are you doing? And to me, that's huge. You know, it's you have to look at another person where they are, and these small steps, acknowledge them for these small steps.
It's very hard for people, and sometimes even me, to get out of my shoes and try to see the world through another person's eyes.
Yeah, and there's the empathy there.
Right.
There's the empathy. But if you go into a situation with a mindset of, you know, I'm going to develop a relationship with Peter because he's that powerful person and he's going to help me get that raise.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you may choose to do that for your own reasons, right? And that's an example of emotional intelligence. But, you know, back to this, what I said before, EQ is not a measure of one's integrity.
Right.
I mean, you choose when to use it and when not to use it to achieve the results that you want. Yeah.
So a lot of people come to you and become your clients at a time of transition in their lives. And I would imagine a lot of times it's a work crisis. Either they're out of work or work's grown toxic and they know they need to get out and they need Edith's guidance to get them to a better place. So I imagine some of these tools come into place.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, why is EQ critical in a career change?
There's so much I can say about that because I think depending on the person, it can play into any or every element of emotional intelligence and self-regard. It's a huge one. I mean, you have to have confidence in yourself to be resilient. If, you know, you've been laid off from a job or if you're going into an interview, you have to be confident with yourself. And I guess one of the things that gets to me about this is that many people are not – are not taught about emotional intelligence. We're not. Mm. It's not a subject, you know, that's taught in school. And people get scared by the word emotion because emotion equates something that's scary and that has no place in the corporate world or in the professional world. And I mean, I'm just playing into my own biases here because I'm very biased in this regard. I think the corporate world, the professional world, and everywhere is everything is about emotions. Everything is emotionally related. But the fact is, we live in a data-driven world, and people place more emphasis on numbers than they do on emotions. And this gets into, you know, the job search too, because you're going on interviews, you're writing a resume that has to be data-driven, that mm-hmm. has to demonstrate quantifiable results, and, you know, all of that. And we live in this world, there's so much of this world that I think it's to the point that we don't even recognize our own emotions. So, and I've come across this with job seekers too, that they, you know, they get so stressed out by a lack of results, and they don't always realize how stressed out they are and how that stress is impacting their families, and it's actually inhibiting them from getting the results that they want. And therein lies the problem, mm-hmm. you know? And our school system is a prime example of this. It starts in the schools, in fact, like, you know, with the standardized tests.
Right.
We're always trying to test and measure, and we manipulate numbers until they tell us what we want to hear. We're not taught how to identify or deal with our own emotions in school. And, you know, we can argue about whether it's, you know, it should be taught in school or not, or by our parents, or should we just learn it on our own? But emotions are a basic part of us, and they're what makes us human. It's not going to help anyone to eliminate or suppress them. We have to learn to deal with them in a productive way, and that's no matter what we're facing in life. It's whether we're changing careers, whether we're going on interviews, whether we're dealing in professional relationships, or, you know, with our families, trying to overcome issues with our families.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, I recruited for 20 years, but I look over a 40-year arc of hiring that started probably in 1979, 1980, especially when the presidency changed and supply-side economics and management by objectives and all these metric-driven directives came into play. And for a while, it probably was a good thing until it wasn't. I think we've outsmarted ourselves in the workplace in terms of not recognizing that work is done by people. Yeah, it's done by AI, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's people making decisions oftentimes. And people need to be supported. They need to feel like they're being recognized and guided. And even in our hiring practices, Edith, you just mentioned the things that people do. The resume has to have the right metrics in it, the right words, the right searchable search terms, and so forth. And one of the things that turned me off about recruiting was just that.
Yeah.
My candidates had to fill in a lot of boxes.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't make them happy. It made them miserable.
And it's the way that the world is now.
But it is changing, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Market-driven.
Okay.
Millennials especially want to work for places that they believe in. They want to work for people that they believe in and where they can believe in themselves. There are a lot of millennials out there in the workforce, and they are probably going to be more prone to select a company or an organization that abides by their code than not, if they can. Now, not everybody gets to choose where they get to work,
mm-hmm.
but oftentimes people do. And I think that's going to foster better emotional intelligence opportunities. At least that's my hope.
Yes, you're very optimistic with that, Dan. that's good. And it's interesting that you're saying this about millennials because I looked at a study recently. It was a global study that actually said the opposite, that millennials are the least purpose-driven generation. And there's a lot of thought about that, because, you know, I've heard it before too, that they're very socially responsible, they're socially conscious and all of that. But my thought about this, I'm kind of not surprised when I saw this, when I saw that study, because it's long been known that younger people focus more on immediate priorities and they're wired to be more self-absorbed. And we think about that with all the technology that's available to people. Mm-hmm. You just push a button and whatever you want is here. And it's great in some respects. And in other respects, if they don't balance that with these other things, it can, you know, create problems, especially when you are, when they are looking for meaningful work and they get passed over for these opportunities.
What has personal technology done to EQ? And I ask that from the standpoint mm-hmm. that I dropped my daughter off at college last week.
Uh-huh.
And even in the midst of all the chaos of moving in, nobody was really looking at each other. They were looking at their iPhones.
Yeah. You know, technology, like anything else, it can be used for good or evil.
Mm.
There's a lot of studies now that say that we are less, even though we're more connected, we have less meaningful relationships now. Mm. I definitely think there's something to that. We can't seem to be away from our phones or our devices for too long. We mistake online, people playing games or people you meet online as real friends. And sometimes maybe they are, granted. But there's not that deep level of intimacy that you would have with a best friend you've known since you were very young and you see regularly. So, you know, you can argue for these things too. But on the other hand, it's look at what technology advancements have done for the betterment of science and the environment in many ways, and just the way we live our lives and the way we get information and use that information to make smart decisions.
You know, one question I thought about, you may have seen this article, I think Daniel Goleman wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
It had to do with EQ and people at work who are somewhere on the autism spectrum.
Mm.
Maybe high-functioning mm-hmm. people that have been diagnosed as Asperger's. Them.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
I would imagine this becomes a problem at work, and I read this article about how EQ can be used to help somebody who maybe has trouble with emotional connections.
Mm-hmm.
What are your
mm-hmm.
thoughts on that?
So boosting interpersonal relationships. So there's, if for folks who want to enhance this ability, you need to work on becoming resilient and trusting relationships with all different types of people. And keeping in mind that sometimes it's not about whether you like that person or not, but interacting with these types of people might be very crucial to your success now and in the future. And I think that's advice that we can all take. I mean, because mm-hmm. we've all been in these types of situations where we have to interact with people we really don't get along with.
Right.
But in doing so, one way I like to look at it is I think that person, no matter who that person is, they know something that I don't.
Right.
Yeah. And not until I take the time to interact with that person can I find out what that is and how I might be able to use that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And not to sound selfish or anything, but it could be something that could be very important to my own success, something that I can use strategically to move myself forward.
So last question, what do you think the future of EQ is in the workplace and with people seeking meaningful work?
Yeah, there's a lot of talk nowadays about the need for enhanced empathy and more social responsibility and actually emotional intelligence in general. I mean, you can just Google it and you'll find emotional intelligence is everywhere on people's radars today. I personally believe that being smart isn't enough. It's not enough to have the right college degree or the right credentials. Emotional intelligence is one of the most valuable skills for me that anybody can use and anybody can enhance. And it's highly relevant in today's world, every facet of today's world. But, you know, the frustrating thing for me, Dan, is the literature is saying one thing, but my own observations say something entirely different. So what I mean by that is, first of all, I think people misunderstand what EQ is, what emotional intelligence is. Mm-hmm. And secondly, it's often when people are talking about emotional intelligence and the need for it, it's something other people need to do. It's not that people don't look at it in terms of themselves and say, well, how can I work on this? What can I do better here? How can I be greater here?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. And that gets back to the skeptics that you were mentioning before, because you have to present the need for emotional intelligence in a way that these skeptics are able to hear. Mm. So I look at it as you kind of have to appeal to people's egos, you know?
Right.
Yeah. People just, you know, it's a shame that they don't spend enough time looking within themselves to see what they need to change. And they don't actively try to make changes. A lot of people don't actively try to do this. And, you know, I understand it's not fun. It's not fun to focus on our weaknesses and try to improve things we've always struggled with. But until or unless we do, we are not likely to get the results that we want.
That's great. And with that, we conclude. Edith, thank you so much for joining us again on The Tightrope. For somebody out there who's heard this episode and listened to the results of my EQ evaluation and say, I'd like to learn more about that and maybe do that for myself, how would they get in touch with you?
Sure, I'd love for them to come to my website. It's www.atopcareer.com. That's atopcareer.com.
And how about your podcast?
I have a weekly podcast. It's called MBTI or Myers-Briggs Question Corner. And I have new episodes coming every Monday night. And if anybody has a question about personality assessments or the Myers-Briggs type indicator, please get in touch with me through my website. I'd love to feature your question on an upcoming episode.
All that information will be in our show notes, including a link to the episode we did with you last year where you talked about my Myers-Briggs type. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Our thanks go out to Edith Richards for walking the tightrope with us. Links to her social media are included in the show notes for this episode. Our success is your success, but we cannot build our community without your help and support. So if you haven't done so already, please join the Dan Smolin Experience to get our newsletter offering information, tips, and hacks to help you succeed in doing meaningful work. To sign up, simply click the Subscribe to the Dan Smolin Experience newsletter button on our homepage at dansmolin.com. Fill out the short form, then click the Subscribe button at the bottom of the page, and you'll be on your way. Also, become a regular listener of the Tightrope with Dan Smolin podcast. You can easily find current and past episodes by keywording The Tightrope with Dan Smolin at Apple Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, on our website at dansmolin.com, or wherever you choose to listen. And don't forget to show your support on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. You can locate our social media buttons at the upper right corner of our webpages at dansmolin.com. From Washington, D.C., this is The Tightrope. I'm your host, Dan Smolin. And do remember this. Our best days lie ahead. Have a great and successful week, everyone.